Welcome to Evolutions Per Minute. I'm your host, Dan Seif, and this is the podcast that explores the connection between hip-hop and jazz. These two art forms, created by Black American artists, share a lot of the same DNA, but the stories of how they're connected haven't really been told. So many hip-hop songs sample jazz records, and in most cases, the jazz and hip-hop artists have never even met. Each episode of Evolutions Per Minute, I will bring together these jazz and hip-hop artists for the very first time to talk about these two styles and learn about how these genres are related. This is Evolutions Per Minute. On this episode of Evolutions Per Minute, I will be bringing together the members of the Oakland hip-hop group Souls of Mischief, Tajay, Festo, Opio, and A+, to meet with jazz drummer Billy Cobham to talk about Souls of Mischief hip-hop classic 93 Till Infinity, which samples Billy Cobham's Heather. Only one member of the group had met Billy Cobham before.
And I actually had you sign the actual album that I sampled. There's my tickets in there and your signature in there. You know, I know you probably don't remember, but I will forever. Thank you so much, sir.
Pleasure's mine. Any little bit to help. You know how all of us old people are, you know. We got to help the youngest go up, you know, not sideways.
Souls of Mischief is an Oakland-based hip-hop group that released their first album in 1993 called 93 Till Infinity that includes that title track.
Hey, this is how we chill from 93 till.
This is how we chill from 93 till.
This is how we chill from 93.
That song has become a huge hip-hop classic. Souls of Mischief are part of a larger collective called the Hieroglyphics Crew. And every year they have Hiro Day, which is a big festival, and they have it on September 3rd, 9-3, in reference to 93 Till Infinity. That song has been reworked and sampled by all these different artists, Freddie Gibbs, J. Cole, Joey Badass, and it's referenced all over hip-hop. You hear people quoting lines from it. It's just one of those pillars of hip-hop. 93 Till Infinity samples a song by jazz drummer Billy Cobham that was recorded in 1974 called Heather. Billy Cobham was a member of the Mahavishnu Orchestra, which was one of the main fusion groups, along with Miles Davis's band at the time, Herbie Hancock's Headhunters, Return to Forever, and Weather Report with Wayne Shorter. He was also one of the kind of inventors, creators of the fusion style of drumming, which was a drumming style that combined jazz with rock and funk and R&B and kind of blended it all together. So I thought that the best way to find out more about these songs and how they're connected was to bring together Billy Cobham with the members of Souls of Mischief. And my first question is for Billy Cobham, that is, what do you remember about recording Heather?
I was writing music out of desperation because I knew that I was going to get fired out of this band called the Mahavishnu Orchestra. I knew that was coming, and I knew that I wanted to go back to the situation I studied for, which was to be a studio recording musician, where I just came in and did anything from bringing Ringling Brothers, Barnum & Bailey Circus to playing behind Carmen McRae from one recording session to the next and everything in between. So when I knew that I was going to have to leave that band one way or another, in the back of my head, subconsciously, we were still playing. And I happened to be, for the first time in my life, and the only time that the Mahavishnu Orchestra had done so as the original band, to be in Japan. And we happened to be in Hiroshima. We all decided as friends to go to the Hiroshima Atomic Museum, where the bomb had exploded above this building. I forget how many meters above it, and just took out everybody, generally you might know. So yeah, that was an interesting thing for me. And I got there. Outside, there were these trees with messages left on each branch, all of the people, family, whatever. And there were body parts being displayed in the undercover. You could see them of individuals vegetated, all of this kind of stuff in the museum. And in the entrance to the museum on one side were little kids, small kindergarten kids, about 6 or 7 years old. They were required to go through that museum and see what was left of the people, literally. that were still living parts of these people, if you want to call them that. And those kids went in smiling, came out crying and shocked. And I thought it was, I mean, for me, it was, that was a hard one to accept. I was sitting on a bench unknowingly, but I mean, so were other people too. It wasn't like it was against the rules, the law. But part of the bench was gray and it had some kind of weird design on it, I thought, until I found out what that weird design was. Sort of like embedded in the chair or the park bench. It was long. It was gray and it just streamed right down the cement bench or whatever that's held it up. Turned out to be the shadow of a person who was sitting on the bench when the atomic bomb went off. And that was all that was left of them.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
That inspired me. I don't know how I got this, because it's still emotional for me. This feeling that I had to write something. And so with two fingers, this da-da-da-da started coming out because I know how to play piano. And I went to music and I had to, all of that, but I was playing like the drummer. It was just that kind of feeling at the time. I just wanted, the rhythm thing was more important. So when I started putting this out and I started to sing the melody, this feeling came out. It was, again, I've been told many times that the most complicated music is the simplest, because most of the time the people that play simple music know too much, and so they make it complicated when it only has to be played simply. And it was really something that I just decided to do, on not on my first album, because it wasn't ready yet. I wasn't sure what I had written, but on the second one, on Crosswinds.
And how did it come to be called Heather?
That's what my ex-wife asked me too. And
I know,
but no. No. I said, I don't know. It just came, and it ended up being that. I have no. It just came out, and I just.
Oh, awesome.
Okay, so I want to turn it over to the Souls of Mischief crew, and I thought maybe A+, you could start by telling us how you found the sample that became 93 Till Infinity.
All right. Well, with the creation of the track, it kind of starts with Gangstar and their album Step Into the Arena. All right, so we're all young, burgeoning hip-hop fans, and we young guys and hip-hop fans for many years since prior to that, but we're still mad young, like 16, 17. And I was a producer for the group at the time, and I was an aspiring producer. I had taken piano lessons and guitar lessons, and I was very mediocre at playing at all. I could read music. My sister and my mother really were the players in the family, but I still love music, and I still could read music, and I still wanted to learn how to produce, and we wanted to be a group and come out one day. So anyway, in 1991 or 92, I believe it was 92, Gangstar came out with the album Step Into the Arena. And what you would do as a young producer back then is, one, you go into your parents' record supply and listen to the stuff, because, you know, sampling was just a new thing at that point. So you would go into your parents' record collection and listen to the stuff that they used to play and find samples. Another way you would do that is record companies started clearing samples in the late 80s. And so they would have to put who they sampled on the back in the credits of whatever album they put out. So as a hip hop fan, we would look into these albums that came out by hip hop artists, our favorite hip hop artists. And I personally would see who sampled what, whatever they had to put. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I already had my parents had Spectrum in their record collection. But I looked at the back of this record, the Gangstar record, Step Into the Arena, and they sampled Billy Cobham twice on that record. They sampled him for Soliloquy of Chaos. That was from Spectrum. And they sampled Here Today, Gone Tomorrow. That was from Crosswinds. It was Crosswind. Mm-hmm. It was the song they sampled. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, when I go. So what we would do is look at these things, and we would go to the record store and try to find these albums. Mm-hmm. So I went to the record store, and I'm like, I got this one Billy Cobham album. I'm about to find all the rest. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Funky Thigh to Sings, Life and Times or whatever. I finally found Crosswinds. And, you know, again, we're like, we don't have any money back in the day. We're scraping together money. I used to take lunch money and do odd jobs and stuff to be able to go to the record store and buy these records. So I found this exact record in the record store, and I listened to it. And I was listening to it. The first thing I wanted to listen to was the thing that premiered at Sample for Here Today, Gone Tomorrow. That was Crosswind. But I was listening to the record, and I heard Heather. And I was like, wow, you know, oh, my goodness. This is the most beautiful shit I've ever heard. So I'm like, I want to try and make a beat out of this record. And with the sampling equipment back then, it wasn't very much sampling time. So what I would do is listen to albums on four. After I figured out what I wanted to sample, I would then listen to the sample on 45. Sample on 45, slow it back down in the sampler to conserve time because you only had like 10 seconds, 12 seconds, 15 seconds, whatever beat machine you were using. You only had so much sampling time that the computer inside the beat machine would allow. So to conserve time, I would sample on 45. But I listened to Heather on 45 and you know how Heather sounds. It's like beautiful. It has a beautiful somberness to it. It has a happiness and a sadness mixed kind of. It's like it's a very unique song. It's like it really emotes, right? So when you hear it on 45, it sounds like upbeat and more. It takes some of the somber out of it and just leaves it happy kind of. And this wasn't my intent. This wasn't my intent at all. But when I played it fast on 45, it made me want to dance. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I'm gonna shake my ass a little bit. So I programmed I was looking to, because I'm like a somber, like a lot of the music I like the slow, like more melodic fusion type song. That's even my personal preference. So I was looking to recreate that kind of vibe when I was initially sampling Heather. But after I heard it fast and I was like, well, this might sound groovy at this. I think it was like a 104 BPM at this point. And I just started working with it from there, just on a whim, even though it was against my initial aim to slow it down and have it in the 80s somewhere, you know. And I just kept going with it. It was like very experimental for me. And by the time it was done, I liked it, right? And there's a whole other part to the story that goes to this, because as I was making this beat, the Souls of Mischief, we had procured a record deal and were in the middle of working on our first album. So that's the part I had left out to this point. So yeah, I ended up making the beat. I ended up making the track, and we were more than halfway done with the album. And actually, there was somebody, another one of our friends, Pep Love, happened to be. I think he was at my home at the time and just hanging out. That we would hang out together. I just make beats. They'd be doing whatever in the background, and I ended up giving the beat to him. And I was like, well, you could have this, or I think I made it and I called him maybe. And I was like, you would sound really good on this beat, Pep Love. And he was like, okay, let me hear it. And I let him hear it. He was like, oh yeah, that's nice. I like that a lot. And then, so the next day we went into the studio, we're recording at Hyde Street Studios in San Francisco. And the rest of the fellas can kind of explain how I ended up playing the beat to them, as opposed to already giving it to Pep Love.
Yeah, so does someone else want to chime in? Tajay, maybe you want to chime in on
that? I'll chime in.
Yeah.
So 93 Till, I think, was the last song we recorded for the album. And so he came in, hey, I made this beat last night. You know, A-Plus likes to play his creations, right? He's constantly creating. So he's just playing the beat. You know, it wasn't something where he was suggesting we use it or anything. I mean, you know, when, you know, a song that's a quote unquote hit, within the first 5 seconds, you're like, oh, this is a hit. So he throws it on and we're like, you know, you did it. You cracked the code, whatever, you're super juice. And then he says, yeah, I gave this to Pep Love, which is, you know, like we're in the middle of recording a record. You know, this is our debut album on a major label. And so we kind of huddled up. We're like, yo, we got to make an executive decision right now. We need this, you know. And Pep Love was gracious enough, you know, to let us have it. And
beautiful.
I mean, we started writing immediately, right? And knocked that out. And, I mean, to the point where we had a song called, I guess, 91 Till Infinity. That
yeah,
a few years back, that had conceptually, we never recorded it, right? But conceptually,
they had a Crusader sample, which was somber and piano, like it's like real somber and sad sounding for the 91 Till Infinity song.
We never recorded the record, but we conceptually, it was kind of like, oh, this is about chilling and our friendship and all these different things. And so we recorded that song immediately. And it turns out to be the title track of the album, et cetera. I don't even think we were going to call the album 93 Till Infinity prior to that. But once we recorded that song, and put the hook on there. I mean, we had to lead with that because, you know, when you hear a hit, and after 30 plus years in the music industry, mm-hmm. I guess we can say certain things. You hear a hit and you know it's hit immediately. We knew, as a crew, mm-hmm. that this is the song that we needed to get behind. And we felt like we had a bunch of other ones, but I just remember immediately being like, yo, nah, we need that. You can't give that to Pep. I'm sorry. You know, so mm-hmm. I'm glad. Shout out Pep Love. He kind of was the king maker in this situation. Mm-hmm. A+ produced it, and Pep was gracious enough to let us have it as the guys who had the opportunity at the time.
Festo, you want to jump in and add anything to that?
One other reason why that song is kind of magical too is because the session, from what I remember, is the session was over. Like we had accomplished what we came to accomplish that day. And the engineer was kind of like, well, you guys have more time. Like, what do you want to do? And then I remember A+ taking out this is when the beats were on floppy disks. So he took the disc out, put the disc in, started playing the song. And we literally, like, I want to say it was the only song that we wrote on the spot and recorded on the spot.
Yeah.
All the other songs had been demoed for the most part. There may be one or two other ones. But, you know, that's the magic it had. You know, it just inspired the concept and, you know, the verses, the lyrics right there on the spot. And it just happened so magically. When I think back to it, at least that's the way I remember it. Even if it didn't exactly happen that way.
It all falls into the same line of divine providence. For some reason, this had to happen. And the elements that are involved, maybe it's still morphing into something else. I don't know. But it's pretty strong. It's pretty strong. Just have to go with it, in my opinion. Whatever you're feeling, we did. I'm wondering what if there's another part. What would that be? Now I'm really interested, very curious to see where we go with this. You know, where it takes us, actually, the music, because it's like a river. You know, and now the current is picked up from us together, from me to you and to us, and who else? You know, along the way, it's very interesting stuff. In the ingredients of this presentation.
Yeah, it's a trip how, I mean, artists, since we put out 93 Till Infinity, so many artists have, other artists after us have utilized what we've done together. And, you know, I can't say it enough. I mean, we've done this together and we're gracious to be a part of that, man. But this, you did this, man. You know, this is you, sir. We're happy to be a part of it, man, but I'm saying.
Opio, I was going to ask you, since we haven't heard from you yet, what are your thoughts about the legacy of 93 Till Infinity and how it's lived on all these years?
It's pretty incredible. You know, I don't think I could foresee 30 years down the line, especially being 18 years old at the time, that it would have this impact. And we do a yearly festival in Oakland called High Road Day, which is actually officially on September 3rd, 93, kind of to commemorate 93 Till Infinity. And I was talking to, you know, people that were born in 1993, and they have like a very special connection to that song. Originally, it was people that graduated maybe college or something in 93. You know, people that graduated high school in 93. Now it's people that were born in 93. So, you know, who knows? Maybe, you know, 2093, that song will still be still going strong.
But these are the things that happen over time. But when I hear what, like, Bruno Mars and you guys are doing and all of that, and I'm going, my God, it has changed. The transcendence, the difference. It's fascinating because every word out of your mouth is about home, about who you are, where you come from, what's going on in the background. And that's what music is all about. You can't lie through that. You can only say who you are. You only present who you are, no matter how you try to twist it. That personality comes out to me, the listener, and go, okay, I get it, or I don't. I agree, or I don't. And that's important because there's a reaction. Now, it always has to be positive, but in the backwards way, even the negative is positive. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wants to walk away, they understood what you were saying. They just didn't want to hear it, or they didn't agree. But there was a reaction, you know, and that's what we're all about. We're artists that way. And so when I hear these combinations, I go, okay, I may not always understand what's going on, but the groove is always there and just continues all of it. The intensity, groove is for me is intensity, the feeling at the time that it was created by the creators. It doesn't necessarily have, and it just may have been my thing well before that added a little bit of support to underline, to support that situation. But on top of my thing is the reality of time of life at that point that it was done. That's how I'm here. I'm seeing it. Mm. And it's always, I have no choice than to say it's refreshing because it's another take. You know, that's cool. It's all cool.
I mean, I just want to say like, it's an honor. Thank you so much. You certainly changed our lives in ways that it's hard to even speak. You have changed our lives, the trajectory of our lives from the moment that we were able to use the artistry you put out there. And
thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I the words won't even say it, man. I'm even choked up a little bit, man. Thank you.
Well, if I had my glasses on, it'd be smoking right now. So I'm glad. But no, to be honest, it when it's happening and it's this kind of interaction, and it wasn't by design. I mean, by someone saying, "Okay, it's choreographed." No, this is life. It was meant to be like this. So you go with it, as I've learned, as far as you can, and take it as a plus if you made any advances, because there's a whole lot of ground to cover and catch up for us, you know, as just as a race, as a human race, you know, and whatever we can get out of it before we have to check out, we better take it, you know, before we have to punch our ticket. So it's good to be associated in any small way that I can be on any level that's positive, you know, and I'm thankful. Yeah. Good to know you guys. Good to have spoken to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let me just express my gratitude. I'm very grateful to have this conversation. Moments like these are very important to me personally. And, you know, you've been very gracious to even take your time and speak to us like that. So we are standing on your shoulders and forever, forever grateful. Thank you.
It's tired. You know. Feet so big. I'll stay there as long as I can. Great. Wonderful. Hope to keep this dialogue going just because, you know, if nothing else. No pressure at all. It was just ideas. You never know. You never know.
Absolutely.
I wish you good luck with all of that stuff you guys are doing too, for sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
So there you have it, the story of how Billy Cobham's Heather became 93 Till Infinity by Souls of Mischief. Thank you to Billy Cobham and the members of Souls of Mischief for joining us on this episode of Evolutions Per Minute. To keep up with the guests on this episode, you can follow Billy Cobham on his website, Official Billy Cobham, or on Instagram at Billy-Cobham. You can follow the Souls of Mischief on Instagram at Souls of Mischief and the individual members at Festo Hyro Soul, Hyro A Plus, Opio Hyro SOM, and Rap Noir for Tajay. You've been listening to Evolutions Per Minute. I'm your host, Dan Seif. Tune in for more episodes of this podcast, and don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Evolutions Per Minute is produced by Stephen Ray, Christian Brune, DJ Khalil, and Autovita Studios, and edited by Sean Hettner. If you like this podcast, you can hear me every week on my radio show, Excursions Radio, on KJAZZ 88.1 FM in Los Angeles, where I play hip-hop and jazz. You can also stream the show anywhere in the world at kkjz.org. You can follow this podcast on Instagram at Evolutions Per Minute, and you can follow me on Instagram at Chief Seif.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.